This week's Parsha is Parshas Emor. The title of the Shir tonight is Punishing the Mekalel. So tonight we're going to look at the end of the Parsha, the whole story at the end of the Parsha dealing with the Mekalel, the person who curses Hashem. And I gave a Shir a couple years ago on the philosophy of the Mekalel. Tonight we're going to focus on a different part of that area, of that Inyan. And there's some pretty open questions, I think, that we're going to try to analyze and take up, and hopefully gain some philosophical insight. All right, if you're on the phone line, can you please put the mute button on? There's a little bit of a crackle here. All right. Can everybody hear me? I think so. All right, if you can't hear me, just take the mute button off and let me know. Okay, so we'll start with source number one. We'll go through the story of the Mekalel, and then we'll ask some questions, and then afterwards we'll get into the analysis. It says, "Vayitzei ben Isha Yisraelis v'hu ben Ish Mitzri b'soch b'nei Isha v'yinatzu b'machane ben ha-Yisraelis v'ish ha-Yisraeli." So the son of a woman who's a Yisraelis, a Jewish woman, and he's the son of an Egyptian man, went into the camp, and he started a fight with another Jew. "Vayikov ben ha-Isha Yisraelis es Hashem as Hashem vayikalel vayaviu oso el Moshe." So this man, he ends up cursing Hashem, and they bring him to Moshe, and his mother, her name was Shlomis Bastiri Lamate Dan. So there's a whole story background to the Mekalel, which I gave Shiran in the past. But basically his mother was the woman that was taken advantage of by the Mitzri that Moshe killed early on in Shemos. So there's a whole background there. So then we get to Yud Beis. It says, "Vayanichu b'mishmar lefrosh lahem al piyad Hashem." So it says they placed him in jail, in custody, in order to understand what to do with him. So the first question that we're going to take up, we're not going to take up the background of the Mekalel, but tonight we're going to take up in the Shir why they put him in jail. What's the idea of putting him in jail? Okay, and then the Torah goes on in Yud Gimel. It says, "Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe le'mor." So Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, "Hotzei asam akalel michutz amachaneh v'samchu kol ashomem esidehem arosho v'ragmu oso kol ha'idah." So he tells Moshe to take the Mekalel out, and everyone should place their hands on him, and they'll stone him. "Vel b'nei Yisrael tadaber le'mor ish ish ki kalel eloka v'nasa cheto." Also teach the Jews that anybody who curses Hashem should bear the burden of their sin, meaning kares, we'll see in Rashi. "V'nokev shem Hashem mosu mos ragum yergamu vo kol aida ka ger ka ezrach ben nokvo shem yumos." And anybody who pronounces the name of Hashem and curses Hashem should be killed, or will be killed, through stoning. And it's no different between a ger and an ezrach, a citizen. If you pronounce the name of Hashem and you curse Hashem with that name, so you're chayav misa. So fine, up to this point it makes sense. The Torah is basically telling us that the halacha by Mekalel is that they're chayv misa, they're chayv to be killed by Beis Din, and the method of misa is skila. But one question that we had up till now was, why did they put him in jail? And furthermore, now we're going to get into an interesting part. So the Torah goes on. It says, "V'ish ki akeh kol nefesh adam mos yumos." So the Torah says that if a man kills another man, he's chayv misa, he's also going to be killed. "Umake nefesh behema yishlamena nefesh tachlas nefesh." And if you hit the animal, so you have to pay money, one nefesh for another nefesh. Hello? Alright. So if you hit an animal, you have to pay, and it's a nefesh tachlas nefesh. That's the way that you pay back the nefesh, the soul for the soul. "Be'ishki tein mum ba'miso kashir asa kein yaselo." And also, if you attack your fellow man and you create a mum, so the same thing should be done to you. Shever tachas shever, ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, kasher yitein mum ba'adam, kein inasein ba. So the basic idea is that if you fracture the other person's bones, your bone should be fractured. You should lose an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. The same that you've done to another person should be done to you. Umake behema yishalmenu, umake adam yumos. If you kill an animal, you pay money, but if you kill a man, you're chayv misa. Then it says, "Mishpat echad yelachem kager ka ezrach yeh ki ani Hashem Elokeichem." There's one mishpat, whether you're a ger or an ezrach, whether you're a convert or an ezrach, I am Hashem, your God. And then if you go to Chaf Gimel, it says, "Vayidaber Moshe al bnei Yisrael vayutzius makalel michutz amachaneh vayigmu oso eben uvnei Yisrael asu kasher tzivad Hashem es Moshe." So at the end, in Chaf Gimel, the end of the Parsha, it says that the Jews followed the commands of Moshe, and they took the Mikala out, and they killed him, and they stoned him. So the second question in the Shir is, what's this whole middle part here? So it would have made sense to me that if the Torah would have just brought down the halacha of the Mikala, and then gone to Chaf Gimel, where it says that the Jews followed out the tzivoy of killing the Mikala through stoning. But there's this whole part in the middle, which starts with Pasuk Yed Zayin to Pasuk Chaf Beis, where the Torah goes into the dinim of when a person kills another person, they're chayav misa. If you damage another person, if you're chovel b'chavero, you're only chayav mamon. If you're chovel an animal, you're chayav mamon. And then at the very end of the Parsha comes back to the idea of the Mikala, on how you're supposed to punish the Mikala. It says that the Jews killed the Mikala, as the Torah stated. So the second question of the Shir tonight is, what's the need, or what's this idea of placing these psukim in between the Mikala story? It doesn't seem to fit into the story. Yud Dalet, Tesvav, Teszayin, those psukim make sense. They're teaching us a halacha of a Mikala, that a Mikala is chayav misa. Well, why are we going into the idea of a regular murderer? Or why do we talk about if a person damages an animal or damages another human being? What does that have to do with the whole story of the Mikala? But you see that the Torah implants these psukim in this, it's embedded in the story of the Mikala, because the last pasuk of the parsha, Chaf Gimel, talks about how the Jews accomplished the goal of killing the Mikala. So the question is, what's the purpose of these psukim? So again, we have two questions. One is, why do they put him in jail? And the second question is, what's the purpose of these psukim in the middle? That what are they trying to teach us? So I think that as you'll see, as we go through the Shir, there's a relationship between those two questions. But those are the two questions that we're going to focus this year on. So the first question is, why do they put the Mikala in jail? It's a famous answer. So Rashi in source number 2 says, Vayanichu levado. They placed him in jail alone. Velo hinichu mekoshesh imo. They didn't put the mekoshesh, the man who gathered sticks on Shabbos, with him. Sheshneim ayu beperek echad. They really, the events occurred in the same time period. Veyodim hayu sham mekoshesh b'misa. They knew that the Mekoshesh was Chayav Misa. The person who gathered up sticks on Shabbos, they knew he was Chayav Misa, that he was Chayav to be killed. Shenamar, as it says, Mechaleh Mos Yumas, it says openly in the Psukim, that when a person violates Shabbos, the Onesh, the punishment, is Misa, is death. Aval lo porash lahem be'ezo Misa. They just didn't know which type of Misa by the Mikala, by the Mekoshesh, by the person who gathered sticks. Lechach Nemar ki lo porash ma yaselo aval b'mekalel who omer lifrosh lahem shlo yodim imchayv misayim lav. But by the mekalel, by this individual, this man who curses Hashem, they didn't know whether he's chayv misa or not. They weren't sure whether he should be killed or not. So the question is, what's the source? According to Rashi, what's the source of this doubt? So the Rashi is explaining, why do they put him in jail? They put him in jail because they didn't know what the halacha is. They didn't know what the onesh should be for this individual, for the mekalel. Should they kill him, or is he chayv malchus? Or Moshe wasn't sure. So the question is, why wasn't Moshe sure? What was the indecision here as to whether the mekalel is chayv misa or not? So they said, like Rashi says, by the mekoshesh, it's open in the psukim that a mekoshesh, a person who violates Shabbos, is chayv misa. But by a mekalel, a person who curses Hashem, it wasn't clear whether the person who cursed Hashem should be Chayav Misa or not. So what is this debate, whether the person who's Mekala should be Chayav Misa? Why is that a question? What is the source, the philosophical debate as to whether this person should be Chayav Misa? It seems like a pretty bad thing to go out in public and curse Hashem's name. So the Chizkuni and many of the Mefarshim give practical answers, but I want to give a philosophical answer. And you'll see it's based on a svarna. So Rashi says, we just read Rashi, and if we go to source number 3, the Chizkuni says, Lifrosh lahem apiyat Hashem, Nira be'eneim shaya chayv skila, Minichsiv aviv imo kilel damav bo, Kal v'chomer l'shchina. So really, the Chizkuni says that it was logical. You could deduce from the fact that you're chayv misa, you're chayv to be killed, if you curse your parents, that certainly if you curse Hashem in public, you should be chayv misa. But there's a principle that we can't learn out onshim, we can't learn out punishments through any logical deductions or any logical principles. It has to be open in the Torah what the punishment is. We can't use a logical system because there's too many factors that determine why a person should be punished and the way that a person should be punished. So there's no clear logical system that could be employed. It has to be open in the Torah. So the Chizkuni says that really, they believed, Moshe and the Jews believed, that the Mikala should be killed because he curses Hashem in public. But they couldn't learn it out logically, so they needed Hashem to state it outright. So that's one possibility, the Chizkuni says. And in Shemos, in source number 4, it's funny also. It says, Elokim lo sekalel v'nasi ba'amachol lo sa'or. So what is the source for the prohibition, the Azhara, to curse Hashem? It's not from here, it's from Shemos. It says earlier in Shemos that if a person is not allowed to curse Hashem, Elokim lo sekalel v'nasi ba'amachol lo sa'or, and also you're not allowed to curse the Nasi, the chief, the leader. And in Rashi says in source number 5, Elokim lo sekalel, Harezu azhar levirkas Hashem, azhar lekilas dayan. So we learn out two things from this pasuk in Shemos. One is that you're not allowed to curse Hashem, and the other one is that you're not allowed to curse a dayan. You're not allowed to curse a judge. So one thing that's interesting, we're going to answer all these questions, but one thing that's interesting in Shemos is that it doesn't mention the punishment. Here in Shemos, it mentions it by our parshan in Emor. So why does the Torah teach us the azhara, the prohibition of cursing, without teaching us the punishment in Shemos? And furthermore, maybe this will give us some insight into what the question was as to whether the Mekala should be Chayav Misa. Rashi says that we learn out from the same pasuk the Isser, the prohibition to curse Hashem, also cursing Dayanim. So why do we learn those out why do we learn them out from the same pasuk? They seem to be two different ideas. To curse a Dayan is very different than cursing Hashem. There's some similarities, but why do we learn them out from the same pasuk? So we'll try to answer all these questions. But up till now, we basically have a couple of questions. One is, why do they put him in jail? And the second question on the psukim is, what's the need for this, for all the psukim about make adam, the whole idea of that if a person hits another person, they're chayav mamon. If they kill another person, they're chayav misa. What is this doing in the whole story of the mekalel? It seems to have nothing to do with the story of the mekalel. And then we saw from Rashi that the reason why they placed him in jail is because they weren't sure what the halacha is, whether they should kill him or not. So what's this debate? What's this question? And the Chizkuni tries to say that it's just ein onshim and adin, that we can't learn our logical onshim. But still, the question is there more to this debate? Is it just simply that they knew he should be killed, but they didn't kill him because it wasn't open? Or was there a more, I guess, subtle question in the mind of Moshe and the people as to whether the Mekalel should be killed until Hashem answered it with the Psukim? So we'll try to answer those questions. And then finally, the very Pasuk that teaches us that you're not allowed to curse Hashem also teaches us that you're not allowed to curse Dayanim. So it's the same Pasuk. So it's interesting that the Torah introduces the prohibition of cursing Hashem simultaneous with cursing Dayanim. What's the comparison? What's the connection between the two? So we'll try to answer that. Finally, the last question before we start delving into this a little more is really from the Griz in source number 6. The Griz is a little bit difficult, but I'll read through it and I'll explain it. And he asks a question on Rashi, and then look in source number 6. So the Griz on the Parsha, he says, "Vayanechu b'mishmar lefrosh lahem al piyad Hashem." Same pasuk. They placed him in jail in order to find out what to do with the guy. Upirish Rashi sheinichu levado v'lo inichu shmekoshesh imo. Like we read in Rashi, the Mekalel was placed alone, and the Mekoshesh was not placed with him. Shiyodim hayusha Mekoshesh b'misa, v'lo porish lahem b'ezo misa. They knew that the Mekoshesh, the person who violated Shabbos by collecting sticks on Shabbos, he was chayv misa. They just didn't know which method of misa. Was it skila, chenek, hereg, was it srefa, any of those? Aval, b'mekalel, lo yodu im chayv misa b'chlal im lov. But by the Mekalel, they didn't know at all. V'tzarech ian, im lo yadu im chayv misa klal, im kein amai hanichu b'mishmar. So one question he says is, if they didn't know that he was chayv misa, why did they put him in jail? And why was it necessary to put him in jail? It's possible that he wasn't chayv misa at all. Bishlama b'mokoshesh yadu shemagil lo misa. By the mokoshesh, it makes sense. They needed to jail him because they knew that he was going to be chayv misa. Elish lo yadu eza misa chayav. They just didn't know which one. Shapir anichu oso b'mishmar. Then it makes sense to jail him. It's basically just awaiting his sentence. Aval b'mekalel shelo yadu klal im chayv misa amai hanichu b'mishmar v'asruhu. So why did they lock up the mekalel if they weren't even sure what his onesh was? Maybe his onesh was nothing. Maybe he didn't deserve an onesh. So why are they locking him up in jail? That's his question. Then he goes on. He says, v'nira Dinei mevuar b'toras kohanim ahadich siv lahalan uvnei Yisrael asu kasher tzivad Hashem es Moshe. It says later on in pasuk chav gimel that the Jews did as Moshe had commanded. Da asu kol ha mitzvah hamur beskila b'makom acher dechia regima utzliya. So they did all the halachos of skila that are taught in a different place in the Torah. And what do those include? Pushing the guy off the cliff, stoning him, and hanging the body. And it says, but it says, Rashi says that, that's what they did. But it says, but there's an isser of hanging a body. V'huva barashi sham, v'lecha'ura tzarach iyan, d'harei ha'parsha, d'tluya v'linas nivlaso ala etz, k'siva b'parshas kisetze. The whole parsha of hanging a dead body after you kill it is in a later parsha in kisetze. V'imishum d'ein muktam u'm'uchar b'torah, if there's no set chronological order in the Torah, g'far namra parsha zu, and therefore skila and the whole parsha of skila and tliya was taught, why did they leave him in jail? It says in Kisetze that if you curse Hashem, you do get hung. It's part of the onesh for cursing Hashem that your body gets hung after the fact. So if they knew that, if they knew the whole halacha of getting of the body being hung, as Rashi points out that they hung the body, so umehai tamis really the chachamim masnisin sham the dafka makala of Ovid Avodah Zarah nislin, only a makala and Ovid Avodah Zarah get hung. The im came to parshazu nemar kfar din makala shehu beskila. So if they knew this halacha that they would hang the body, because Rashi says that that's what they did. So if they knew that halacha, they should also know the halacha of skila. That a mekalel is chayv skila. Sharei nitla kedin kol niskalin, that he should get hung like the din of all niskalin. The imkain amai hanichu b'mishmar v'doche. So why do they put him in jail? Basically, they should have known that he's chayv skila from the fact that kilas elokim taloi. There's an idea that that a person who curses Hashem should be hung. So if they knew that idea, so then they should also know that he was chayv skila. If you look in source number 12, quickly, it says, "Ubnei Yisrael asu kol mitzvah hamur beskila b'makom acher dechia regimo tliya." They did the whole mitzvah. So if they knew about tliya, if they knew about the idea of hanging him already, and that's later on in Kisetze, they should have known and inferred that he was chayv skila. So the fact that they knew to hang him also would teach you that they knew that he was chayv skila, because it doesn't say in the psukim here that he's chayv to be hung. It says it later on. So once they know that, they should also know that a mekalel is chayv in skila, because that's the only time when you would hang the body if a person was niskal. So that's his question. V'im kein amai anichu b'mishmar v'dochik lomar da'akshav nemru lo shtei parshios elu onesh ha-megadef u'parshios lo salin haksuva per kisetze. It's dochik to say that at this point both parshios were taught. It makes more sense to say that they already knew about the halachos of skila, and that a mekalel is chayav tliya. So that's his question. They already knew that he's chayav in skila. So he says, "V'nira de afagav de bekra chazina de mekalel nitla de hainu achar sheniskal." Even though a mekalel is hung after he's stoned, umuchach de misaso beskila, and it's obvious that he's chayav in skila. Mikomakom adain lo hayalehem tzivoy al din skila mekalel. They didn't have the command to stone the guy. Ublit tzivoy lo ratzu lesokla. So without a tzivoy, they didn't want to stone him. Af shahayalem raya barura al kach. Even though they knew for a fact that he was chayv in skila, they didn't want to stone him without a tzivoy. Umishum achi hanichu b'mishmar v'rak la'achash nitztav v'laskila az asu k'chol akas v'parsh skila dainu tliya v'losalin v'asol eitz. So that's why they put him in jail. They knew he was chayv skila. They knew he was going to be chayv to be killed and stoned, but they didn't want to do it until it was open in the psukim, until God told them openly to stone the guy, even though they knew for a fact that he was chayv skila. So what kind of answer is this? This strengthens our question, because the Griz is saying that really Moshe knew what the halacha was. He knew that this mekala was chayv skila, that he was chayv to be stoned. He was obligated in stoning, and that was going to be his method of being killed. And he brings a raya, the Griz brings a raya from the fact that later on they did tliya, they hung the body after it was stoned. And that's only halacha by Mekalel and Ovid Avodah Zarah. And that's later on in Kisetze. So if they knew those halachos from Kisetze, they also would have known that he would have been stoned. But the fact is that the Griz says that they didn't want to stone him until there was a tzivoy. So why didn't they want to stone him until there was a tzivoy? What was the... It sounds more like there was a hesitation in terms of Moshe and the Jews to stone the Mekalel, Yeah, even though because there was no open pasuk to stone him, even though they knew logically and they knew with a raya berura, he says, an open proof from the fact that they had to hang the body, they knew for a fact that he was chayv skila. So what exactly was holding them back? What was the debate when it says vayanichu b'mishmar that they put him in jail? What were they waiting for? Why did they need the tzivoy to be open in the psukim before they did skila on him? So other than just, you can answer it, and you can give a simple answer and just say they just don't have a right. But I think there's a deeper issue here. There's a deeper idea here, and I think we're going to try to tackle that issue. Okay, just before we get to the answer, just a couple facts here. In source number 7, what happened? Hashomim Elu Ha'edim. So the Edim who heard the Mekala were Chayev to stone him, kol lahavias dayanim esideim, they would all put their hands, this is an interesting halacha, they all put their hands, omrim lo damecha beroshcha, ve'in anu nenashim emisa, sha'ata garamta lecha. Same thing, this is a weird halacha also that we'll have to explain. There's a special halacha of smicha here, that before they would kill him and stone him, they would place their hands on the mekalel's head and say, you caused your own death, we're not responsible for your death. So why do they do that in this situation? This is a rare situation where they did smicha, where they put their hands on the person who's being killed. They don't normally do that by a person who's Chayav Misa or Chayav Skila, by a person who's Mekal Shabbos, they didn't do Smicha. So why over here, by the Mekalel, was in part of the killing process for them to put their hands on his head? I think there's one answer. Everything's going to come together, hopefully, at the end of this year. And then it says, Kol Eidab Imamad Kol Eidab Mikanshe Shlucho Shel Adam Kimboso. Fine, so look in source number 8. Rashi says, V'nosa Cheto Bekaris Kishein Asra. So when a person doesn't have Hasra, and they just are Mekalel in public without Hasra and Edim, then they're Chayv Karis. But if they do it in public, they're Chayv Misa and Beis Din. And then source number 9, it says, V'nokev Shem, Inu Chayv Achi Yifarish Es Hashem, V'lo Mekalel B'kinoi. You have to say the Shem Hashem. You can't use a kinoi, a euphemism. You can't use another name. You have to use the actual Shem Hashem, and you have to spell it, you have to enunciate it in order to be Chayv Misa. So it's very specific. V'nokev Lashon Klala. It's this idea of the no cave is to curse. Okay, and then our questions also arise. In source number 10, it says, V'ish kiyake, l'fishinemar, make ish v'meis, ein li elish hargas ha'ish, isha v'kata minayin, tamalomar kol nefesh adam. So then the Torah goes into the halachos of when you kill another person. So when you chayv misa, even if you kill a woman or a child, where do you know it from? From kol nefesh adam. So for some reason, the Torah transitions from the halacha of mekalel, that a mekalel's chayv skila, into all halachos of what your own ish is, if you kill another person, if you damage an animal, if you kill an animal, if you damage another person. So why is the Torah going from one story to another story? Okay, so a lot of questions. So let me just summarize the questions, and then the answer, I think, lies in this Svarna that we're going to read. And we'll use it as a springboard for an idea, for a possibility. So just to backtrack, the questions, the two main questions of the shir. So if you forget all the side questions, the two main questions of the shir are, why did they put him in jail? What exactly were they questioning in terms of figuring out what he deserved? And the second question is, why does the Torah introduce all the halachos and all the dinim of when a person kills another person, when a person damages an animal, when a person damages a human being, and then at the very end of the parsha, it brings us back into the Mekalo story. So why is there a whole separation, a whole break here with all these dinim? So those are the two main questions. And then the side questions are, why did they do smicha? We brought in the grizz. The grizz strengthens our question. But what exactly was their debate? Why did they do smicha is another question. And why does the Torah introduce Elokim los kalel by the dayanim, also simultaneous with the iser to curse dayanim, to curse judges? What's the connection between the two? Those are side questions. The main questions are those two first two questions in the shir. So the Svarno, which is a difficult Svarno, and I'm going to read it. I have the English from Svaria to help us out, because it's very difficult to understand. But even with it, it's still hard. But he introduces some concepts that I think we can extrapolate from the Svarno and try to use in terms of giving a Svara, giving a theory as to what exactly is going on here in the end of the Parsha. So it starts as follows in source number 11. It says, V'ish kiyake kol nefesh adam. So it says, "Biyos kilas Elokim etzel k'tasa umos davar nekal me'od." By most nations, cursing God is not considered a very harsh thing to do. It's very light. It's davar nekal. It's very light in their eyes. Ka'amro v'skatze fikila b'malko uvelokav uvelohav. Yeshayahu says that about the Goyim, that the Goyim, the non-Jews, they'll rage, they'll get angry, and they'll curse their king and their God. Uka Amram Zal, and there's another proof from Sanhedrin, Hashomea Askara Mipi Goy, Eno Chayav Likroa. If you hear a guy say the name of Hashem out loud, you're not chayav to do kriya. You don't have to tear your clothing. Shim Einata Omer Kain, Nismala Kol Abeged Kulo Kroim. The Gemara says, if you were chayav in kriya, if you're chayav to tear your clothes every time you heard a non-Jew curse God, so then you wouldn't have any clothes left. Your clothes would all be tattered. So it's open Gemara. So you see from there, the Svarna wants to say that the non-Jews, they don't treat cursing their God as something very serious. They treat it lightly. It's not very important to them. V'imze nira shiadibor amakalo b'ze davor batel b'yos kol klala nimnas b'metzios hakel yisbarach. So now he says that, I'm going to read you the English. He says, keeping this in mind, we might have assumed that the curse uttered by the blasphemer in our paragraph should have been treated as irrelevant. This is especially so since we are all aware that blaspheming against God does not harm him in any way. It's an exercise of man's frustration, not something harmful to the object of his blasphemy. So he says here that based on the way the Goyim treat curses, you might have thought that the same idea is how we should treat a curse, and the Mekalo should be treated in the same way, because we know that the Mekalo can't really affect God. It's just the man's frustrated, and he can't really, his curse doesn't have any effect on God because God's not physical and he's not hurt by the curse. So therefore, perhaps the Mekalel should be treated or shouldn't be treated as harshly. It should be irrelevant that he's cursing God in public. Who cares? It's not such a big deal. He's not really harming God. He says, "Bir atam," back to the Sfarno, "the Amar ki umnam hapol hara kasher yia nase benosim mischalfim afal pishu pol echad ba'atmo." Yischalif ancho kefi chiluf osam anosim achio onesh biosachet beezen nosha onesh begufa onesh misa. Okay, so now he says, and I'll read the English. He says the Torah explains that the reason why this blasphemy is treated as if something of substance. So why do we treat the klala, the mekalo, as if it's real, as if he's actually almost, so to speak, harming God? God forbid, must be seen in a different context. We have to look at it differently. We know from Torah that each deliberate act of disobedience against God is basically an act of insurrection, mutiny, and we could expect it to be treated as such, equivalent to forfeiting one's life. So anytime a person violates the Torah, he's basically doing an act of mutiny against God. He's rebelling against God. Nonetheless, the Torah has demonstrated that some deliberate sins rate quite different punishments than others. So some sins have different onshim than others. And then he says, basically, the Torah provides for financial penalties, physical punishments, and the death penalty. Back to the Sfarno in the Hebrew. There's different levels of onshim. There's the onish of the guf and onish of mamon. So first, the Torah talks about the fact that if you kill another man, you're chayv misa. So the Torah distinguishes based on the heinousness of your act, whether you'll be chayv misa. If you kill another man, you're chayv misa. But if you kill an animal, you're only chayv in mamon. Shenis, the second example that the Torah gives here, is bechovel. Shachovel adam hayaroi la'anosh beguf. Really, the person who damages another person should incur the same loss, an eye for an eye, ayin tachas ayin. Lulei chisaron yecholteinu letzamtem. But we can't do that. We just can't approximate exactly what was lost. Kemosha kiblu rabbasinu zal. V'hutzrach la'ancho mamon. He has to pay money. So the money is a lot. You have to pay five different things. So it's a lot of money. But if you damage an animal, you pay less money. So the Torah is just going through different differentiations in onshim based on how bad your crime is. So if you kill a human, you get killed. But if you kill an animal, it's only mammon. If you damage a human being, it's a lot of money. If you damage an animal, it's less money. Shlishis bechovel adam shechovel ba'aviv ve'imo chayv misa. When you damage your parents, you're chayv misa. Bechovel ba'adam acher chayv mammon. If you damage your friend, you're chayv mammon. Ve'ein tzarach lomar makeh behema b'zeh ofen shi'a ancho mu'at me'od. And if you damage, it seems very similar, but he says if you damage an animal, your onesh is very little. Kilas aviv imo. So why doesn't the Torah mention the idea of kilas aviv imo here? The cursing your parents. Ki bilti domel zosta klala. it's not similar to the klal of God. Shehu dibor bata legamri velochein kil asa av. When you curse God, it has no effect on God. But when you curse your parents, if it gets out, if people hear about it, if your parents hear about it, it has an effect on them. Because a curse has a psychological effect on a person who hears it. So they're different curses. So that's why the Torah doesn't include it here. Kill us, aviv ve'ima. Okay, fine. So the Svarno, it's not so clear, even in the English. If you read through the English, it's not so clear what exactly he's saying. He's basically saying that you would have thought that the Mekalo should be treated not as harshly as he's treated, because you see from the way the non-Jews treat curses that it's not such a big deal. And also, we know that the curse doesn't have any effect on God at all. And then he says that the Torah differentiates onshim based on how bad your act is. So the worse the act, the worse the onesh, and the lesser the act, the lesser the onesh. But what is the idea here? What's he pointing to, the Svarno? I'm just going to use one of his ideas to try to explain, you know, what exactly is going on in the story of the Mekalo. So perhaps, to use what the Svarno is saying, maybe the debate over here is based on the Svarno's idea, which is that the curse by Hashem, the Mekalo, has no real effect on God. And normally, when you curse somebody, it does have an effect. It might not be supernatural, but when somebody hears that you curse them, or if it gets out, or if it's public, if you curse in public somebody and other people, it's damaging to the person, because other people will hear it and they'll treat that person differently, or the person himself that you cursed will get a hold of it or will hear it and it'll damage them. So there is a damage to a curse in general. But by God, there's no damage, meaning your klala is not damaging God at all. I mean, it's not harming him, because he can't be affected by it. So the question is, so perhaps the debate, or the Vayanichu Mishmar, is really that idea, is the idea that for man, for normal people, it's hard for us to think of a punishment with to that degree without an effect, without there being an effect. Like when we see that you killed somebody else, we look at the effect of your act, and we determine it's logical and it's natural for a human being to determine that a punishment should be based on an effect of an act. So if I kill you, the effect of my act was terrible because I killed a human being. So therefore, the punishment should be terrible. But the idea of Mekalo and what it's teaching us is that the Torah doesn't view onshim in the framework of effects. It views onshim in the framework of your flaw, of how bad your flaw was, how much of a mutiny, how bad the insurrection was against God. So it could be that your actual curse has no effect on God, and God's not affected by it, of course, like the Svarno says. But the Torah looks at the onesh not vis-a-vis the effect, but the Torah looks at an onesh vis-a-vis the nature of the flaw and how bad the flaw is, how heinous is the flaw relative to God. And that kind of goes against the natural human tendency to think of onshim. So if you ask a non-Jew whether a person should be killed for a curse, for cursing God, they would think it's nuts. They would think it's crazy. But if you ask the non-Jew whether you should be killed for killing another person, they would say, yeah, of course. Because the natural human tendency is to view onshim in the framework of effects of our acts. How bad is the act? It's based on the effect of the act. If the person that I killed is dead, we see the dead person, and now we view it as terrible, and you should be killed too. But the Torah looks at everything in the framework of the flaw itself. How bad is the flaw vis-a-vis God? So when you kill, so I think what the Torah is teaching us, so why is it introducing all these psukim after the Mekalo? So it's teaching us that once you have the ikur, the essential idea of Mekalo, which is that the Torah's value or view of punishment isn't based on any effect per se, but it's based on the nature of the flaw and the heinousness of the flaw, of the mutiny against God, like the Svarno says, the English interpretation. So once you say that, so then that should affect also the way you look at dinim, the way you look at why a man's killed for killing another person. It's not that a man's killed for killing another person because of the effect of the person's life being taken, but it's because of the heinousness of the crime in terms of the Ratzon Hashem, that a person is completely violating Ratzon Hashem in terms of his killing of another person. So, and it's worse. It's a worse flaw when a person's able to be that egocentric that they're going to kill somebody else. But it's not based on the effect. As opposed to the way our natural human mind works, we look at onshim as being a byproduct of an effect of an act, not the act, not the nature of the act, not the heinousness of the act per se. So a normal person, like I said, normal person looks at Mekalo, and it's natural to think that a Mekalo shouldn't be killed. it doesn't make sense to us logically or intuitively why Mikal should be killed, because, like the Svarno says, it's not going to affect God in a negative way. But the idea is that the Torah views onshim vis-a-vis the act, vis-a-vis the flaw, not vis-a-vis the effect of the act. And that's the ikar. And then once we have that idea, so now we can view how regular dinim work differently, with a different insight. We don't just look at dinim the way that non-Jews look at dinim. We don't just look at a person being chayv mamon simply because of the fact that he harmed the other person. We look at the chayv mamon based on the nature of the philosophical flaw that caused the person to do this, or that was the reason that the person harmed somebody else, that they were negligent. So that's a philosophical flaw that the onesh fits to, the onesh of paying mamon fits to. So we have to look at onshim differently. Once we have the ikar yesod of the essential principle of mekalo, it'll affect the way we look at dinim. We'll look at it differently. So the debate, I think, in the Torah is that it goes against our natural tendency. That our natural tendency is to think that a person who's mekalo shouldn't be punished with misa because the effects of the klala are minimal in terms of God. But that's why they needed a tzivoy, meaning it. The reason for a tzivoy is that it goes against our innate tendency to think about these things. It goes against our natural tendency. So the Torah has to give us a tzivoy in order for us to understand or to overcome that. And I'll prove this idea to you. I'll prove the concept, I think. So if you look at Rashi in source number 12, the very last pasuk teaches us that the Jews ended up killing him. It says, "Vayderem Moshe al bnei Yisrael vayotzius makalel michutz amachne vayirgemu oso even uvnei Yisrael su kasher tivah d'shem es Moshe." That the Jews did as Moshe had commanded them. And Rashi says in source number 12, "Uvnei Yisrael su kol mitzvah amur beskila b'makom acher d'chia regimo tzlia." So the Torah teaches us that they did the whole mitzvah of skila, including the pushing him off the cliff and stoning him and being tall in him and hanging him up. So why does the Torah have to teach us this? I mean, why does the Torah have to say Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe? So in general, I think, or perhaps the idea which fits into the Svara is that the reason why the Torah has to teach us is because there was a resistance to doing this. Meaning the Jews had a natural resistance to killing the Mekalel, because you can't really see naturally, intuitively, why this person should be killed. But yet, nevertheless, they were able to overcome their resistance. They were able to do the skila as prescribed. And skila is a pretty gruesome, you know, act. It's throwing a guy off a cliff, throwing stones on the guy, hanging up a body. All these things are pretty harsh, pretty gruesome, that a normal person would look at and say, or have a resistance to doing. But the idea of Kasher Tzivah Hashem Es Moshe is teaching us that despite the fact that there's this debate in the human mind, or there's this resistance in the human mind, the Jews were able to overcome that. The Jews at that time, and Moshe was able to teach them this idea, this concept, they're able to overcome any sense of resistance towards killing this Mekalel. So again, I think the Torah is teaching us a critical idea about how we look at Onshim vis-a-vis our actions. So Mekalel, this story is teaching us that there's a debate, there's a natural tendency of the human mind to look at onshim as a byproduct of the effects of your act, not the act per se. But Mikhail teaches you that you can have an act that's so heinous that it itself deserves misa, even though the effects of the acts aren't so bad. You know, God's not affected by the klala. So the Torah has to show you, once you have that idea, it should affect your whole view, your whole philosophical view of why a person's killed when they kill another person. It's not simply because of the effect of the death of the other person, but it's also because of the nature of your crime and the nature of your crime on a philosophical level, that you deserve misa, that you deserve death. So once you have that, now you can also understand the end of the parsha. The end of the parsha is teaching us that despite this natural resistance, the Jews were able to overcome it, and they were able to kill the Mekalel completely properly through skila, dechia, and regima, and talia. All these things, all these aspects of skila, were accomplished as prescribed by Hashem to Moshe. So there's one other idea. The Ramban says in source number... Yeah, go ahead.
But I was thinking that this crime does have something to do... I mean, it harms people because, you know, the thing like before, when they repeat it, then they have to, read their souls, and it's like it has an effect on the people that heard it.
It does have an effect on the people that heard it, but still, even so, if you ask, if you ask a non-Jew, ask a regular non-Jew, if, I don't know if you encounter you know, non-Jews in your, you know, in your work. But if you ask a non-Jew, you know, what do you think about this concept that a person who curses God should be killed? I mean, I think there's like a, I think there's a natural tendency for a regular person to think that I would never kill that person because it's just a curse. First of all, you minimize curse, and second of all, God doesn't care. It's like there's this idea that God doesn't care. He's not affected by it. So yeah, it does affect the people negatively, but still, ultimately, is that really, like in our minds, is that really something that deserves death? The effect that Klala has on the people? I mean, it's even if a person hears it and has to do Kriya, but should the person be Chayav Misa? So I think that's what the Torah is teaching us. It's not the effect that's the essence, it's the flaw. The level of the flaw, the person, the rebelliousness of cursing God in public is a flaw that's so heinous that it itself deserves the onus of Misa. It's not because of its effect on people, because I would say that the effect of on people of a Klala isn't enough, or at least logically it doesn't seem to be enough that you should put the person to death, and it certainly isn't affecting the person who, or the being, the existence, God. It's not affecting him at all. So the effect is limited. So if you say that the effect is limited, so where does the Chiyuv Misa lie on? Where does it come from? It comes from the act itself, the mutiny, the level of rebelliousness of the act. So one other point, just the one last, the Ramban, in source number 13, he gives a different answer, a very good answer. So he asks the same question, why do we need this last pasuk that teaches us that they killed him? So if we go back, go to the end of it, we don't have to read through the whole thing, he quotes Rashi and Ibn Ezra, and then he says, Kitama kasav lomar, look at the last three lines, lomar, ki kasher diber Moshe al bnei Yisrael, tziyum yadas makalel viragmu, so Moshe told them to take the makalel out and stone him, but asu kein kol bnei Yisrael lishmor velasos kasher tziva Hashem as Moshe, velo lesinas ben amitri, shenotza im ha-Yisraeli, ela levar ha-begam mitochom. So the Torah is teaching us a different idea, that really, this guy was a fighter. He went into the Jewish camp and he started a fight with a regular Jew, this Mikalel. And it could be that they harbored this aggression towards this guy because of the fight that he created. He's a mean guy. So the idea the Torah is telling us is that that wasn't their motivation. Their motivation in killing him in the Skila was simply to remove the pagam of the Mikalel. The idea of kill us Hashem, that was really the motivation for them to kill him. They were able to separate their personal emotions, their personal hatred of him, of the Mikalel, because of the fight, from the philosophical flaw that, you know, that was created, or the philosophical chait that deserved this onesh. So that was the chiddush that the Ramban's saying. It's a nice point that the Ramban's making, that it's a similar idea to what we were saying for Rashi, that the purpose of the last pasuk is to teach you that they're overcoming some resistance. That's Rashi, I believe. But the Ramban's saying it's to teach you that they're able to separate their personal hatred for the Mikalel, who was a fighter, from the idea of removing the pagam, of removing the idea, removing the pagam, removing the philosophical flaw. So that's the share. So really, just to summarize, that's the end of the share. But just to summarize, I think the idea, the key idea in the Mikalel, the punishment of the Mikalel, is the concept that we can't look at the effects of your act as the reason for punishment. It's rather we have to look at the flaw itself, the flaw per se, and the level of depravity or the level of heinousness, mutiny of the flaw is really the cause of punishment. But once you have that idea, and that's something that's counterintuitive, but once you have that idea, now that should affect your whole approach to dinim in general, to the way you look at even onshim bein adam le'adam, bein adam l'chaveiro. So whenever you see those onshim, you shouldn't just view them as an onesh because of the effect that it has on the animal, the effect that it has on the person, but you should view it in terms of the nature of the flaw that's creating that, the flaw that caused him to do this. That's really the source, or what's really deserving of being of punishment, of onesh. And the idea of the Mikalel is really the main philosophical concept that brings us to this new outlook. And then finally, the last pasuk in the parsha teaches us that despite this natural counterintuitive nature of killing that it would be wrong to kill a Mikalel like the non-Jews have. So the Jews were able to see this philosophical point, and they were able to overcome any resistance they had. I think that's what Rashi's saying. The Ramban says that a little slightly different. He says that they were able to separate their personal hatred for the Mikalel with the idea that they had to remove this man from the nation because of the philosophical flaw. All right? All right. Any other questions? I didn't answer one question this year, so I'm aware of it. And I was thinking about it. I don't really have a clear answer. I was thinking about it as we were giving this year.